Let's talk for a minute or two about King's Home. How do you see the future development of King's Home, and what are you proudest of during your time in terms of the development of
If I quickly say what I'm most proud of at King's Home, it's a pitch, but I'll come on to that in a second. That's been a game changer, absolute game changer for this club. So King's Home's a brilliant, I love King's Home as a theatre. I'll never forget Friday nights at King's Home, never. Obviously I'm so invested in it, you know, and the energy and the anxiety and the passion and the highs and lows for me here have been tremendous. But I think
you've always told me that King's Home under floodlights is the thing that excites you.
It is, yeah, I love it. And, you know, I love Friday nights at King's Home, and I think we're pretty much bloody invincible on a Friday night at King's Home. The players love it as well, absolutely love it. In fact, at one stage I nearly changed our preferred match time kickoff to be a Friday night at 7:45 away from Saturday at 3, but I took it to a fans forum group and I got shot down pretty quickly.
That'd be a bit contentious.
It's funny, you get a lot of people that love it because they get the weekend to themselves. Anyway, so King's Home, there have been things. Obviously, we've done no wholesale changes, and we did a lot of changes to the Rugby World Cup in 2015. So we improved a lot of the facilities around, infrastructure wise, you know, new floodlights, etc., etc. I think that things like the Lions Den and that have been quite sacrosanct to us, and I'd like to try and keep them as they are. The shed again, you know, if we ever come to expanding this stadium, it will not be at the shed won't be the first thing that we go to. You know, we've got two ends of the stadium, the one on the Worcester Road here is a temporary stand which we get signed off once a year. That would be rife for improvement at some stage, as would the West Terrace as well. The shed is kind of iconic, really. It needs tarting up at some stage. We need to put better toilets in the back of it. We need to do a little bit with it, but it will still be a stand, and we're not going to start putting executive boxes on it and all the rest of it. The south stand's getting a bit tired in some areas. We've got plans in place to improve some of the lounge areas, the boxes, the food and drink offerings. We've got some quite exciting offerings, actually. There's been a number of things, you know, things that we even forget about now. So, you know, we put a little fan zone over by the shed. We, you know, I wanted to keep the red and white posts that we had back in the day. Those, you know, a ton and a half of rolled steel. It just felt sad to leave that somewhere. So we put those in place over there as a meeting point for people. We've improved the bars and things over there as well. But I think, you know, we've done things with Wi-Fi and apps and access control systems, so you can get in with a bleep rather than having to show a ticket, all that sort of stuff now. But I would say the game changer for me over all of those things has been the pitch. It was quite a task, actually, because when your organisation doesn't make any money, to go cap in hand to ask for a big chunk of money for something that's not going to return any investment, it's quite difficult. So I had to do quite a large piece of work in terms of what I thought it was going to... I knew, gut feel, that we were never going to be able to play the brand of rugby that we wanted to play on the pitch that we had. And it wasn't good for our brand, and it wasn't good... You know, we couldn't do anything on it from a community perspective. We couldn't train on a training day before games, so we were losing advantage. So I pulled a piece of work together and said, look, here are the options. We can stay as we are. This is what it costs us to maintain it every year. Here are the downsides to doing that. All of these options... At the time, the board were very keen on an artificial surface. I wasn't. And thank God I was steadfast in my approach to that. And I got the reasons why. You can get blown up and thinking, well, if we have an artificial pitch, we can loan it out every day. We can play football on it, you can play cricket on it, you can do this on it, you can do that on it. So I went off and did a bit of a painstaking piece of work with Worcester and Newcastle and Saracens. And I said, well, how do you guys commercialise this? And actually, thankfully, the amount of money that these guys got through was minimal. And by the time they kept the lights on overnight and paid a steward and a bar staff, so I could go back and say, if you want it, you can have it, but don't think this is some kind of cash cow. It's not. And by the way, the players will hate it, the coaches will hate it, the chief exec won't like it, and the fans won't like it. If you're happy to go with all of that, crack on. And I will be mindful of being positive about it. But from a performance perspective, if we're a rugby club, first and foremost, I don't think it's the right thing to do. And I badgered away and badgered away and badgered away. And I went off and they said, well, the Deso pitch is too expensive, which it was. So I went and found a company called County Turf up in Lincolnshire. They'd just done Leicester's pitch, which was effectively a not as good version of our pitch. And I went and met with them and I said, well, okay, show me what you can do. And they took me to Leicester's training pitch. And the pitch that we've got now, Boris Stankovic, the scrum coach at Leicester, has got a 30-foot by 30-foot square area for scrummaging and nothing else. They've got like a lower version of ours, a cheaper version. And so they were showing me Leicester's pitch. He said, well, I'm not that keen on it. And I said, what's that over there? And he said, well, that's the premium grade. That's called our hero pitch. I said, well, what about that then? He said, well, that costs this. I said, okay. And I started to do some of the sums and thought, well, we can train on it more, which will give us a better advantage. We can do more stuff in the community. At the end of the year, we can hire it out a little bit. Do some sums here. And I said, well, who has this hero pitch? And he gave me a list of it. It was Arsenal and bloody Real Madrid and all these other things. And anyway, so I went and seen it in action. It's 5% polyurethane effectively and 95% grass. What it does, it gives better solidity. It's like a reticulated plastic underneath as well. Everything grows through. The grass is, you treat it like a grass pitch because it is 95% grass. Plays like a grass pitch, but it's better for scrummaging. It's flatter. So we had the whole thing, you know, flattened with lasers and everything built up. I've got videos on my phone. I became an absolute bloody expert and boring people to tears about pitches for a year of my life. But anyway, I managed to get it over the line. I said, it costs this, which is pretty similar to an artificial pitch cost. Here are the benefits. And by the way, everyone's going to love it. And the players, like, it was like giving them the best Christmas present they've ever had in their lives. And people like Henry Trindle, like, literally on his knees, going, thank Christ, you know, we now love coming to play here. You know, Tom Marshall saying, I used to hate kicking out of that corner. You know, it felt like a slope down here. And I hope it's been part of the marginal gains that have meant that we've suddenly become a top four team. And I honestly believe it is, because the way that we play rugby, we have to play on a flat surface and a good, solid surface. We train on it 2 and 3 times a week now. That's got to be an advantage, you know. So I would say, of all the things, that would be the thing that I'm probably most pleased with, because it became a real pet project for me personally. And I was delighted at the results. It's been fantastic.
Yeah. And an impressive legacy. Yeah. What's been your main frustration of something you couldn't fix that you'd love to here at Kingsland?
Main frustration, something I couldn't fix. I would probably say probably some of the match day experience things have frustrated me, because we've got a finite budget. So I completely get that. And I know you're going to think this is quite granular, but you probably know me well enough to know now. I have gone and watched quite a few games in the shed and in other parts of the stadium to experience what goes on. So it's things like, we've got a pretty naff PA system, which works in certain parts of the ground well. And I know everybody hears differently, but I'm still not convinced all the work we've done, it's right. I think there's more work we can do around bars and serving and service, which we're going to be doing, by the way. I think there are things around match day where I would like to have done more with supporters potentially having better access to players on a match day, for example. I think there are other things around this stand here, which is the main stand, as it were. I think in terms of the layout, when it was built, I wasn't here, but if only we'd paid a few extra bob to not have those the posts in the way. Because it's effectively the same stand as Worcester's, built by the same people at the same time, but we went with the posts. And it's a frustration of mine that that's in place. There's also, I think, we could make some of the areas around the stadium a little bit more hospitable for supporters, especially in the winter months. So there are lots of those types of things, if I'm honest with you. And probably as well, frustration around things like car parking. We just don't have enough car park spaces. It creates problems for the local residents around here. The site next to King's Home at the moment, where SLG were, you know, I'd give anything for us to be able to be there and have that site and do something with that. Maybe build a hotel with great conferencing facilities and bar facilities for supporters and meeting rooms for players in there, you know, or could it be an next training facility? So a frustration of King's Home is how penned in we are. So if you go to Wasps and Worcester and Sale and Exeter, although I wouldn't swap the experience in terms of an atmosphere, at all with any of those clubs. What I am quite jealous about is their space. They can build things and put things on there and fan zones and things. We're often quite hamstrung by what we can do by the space. I bought a guy in, I hate queuing, full stop. Queuing's a real bugbear of mine. I bought in a guy that I used to work with on the Olympics, who's got the best title ever. He was a professor of people movement. Completely made up, surely, but if he was good enough for Olympics, he was good enough for me. So I brought him in and I got him to, and as I just said, I'm starting from the issue I've got here. My issue is we have too many queues at the bars and I hate it. It's packed. It's losing us money and it's a poor experience for supporters. And he came to sell out games, he came to other games, he looked at everything else and he came back. It was good news and bad news. The bad news is you're not doing a lot wrong. The good news is you're not doing a lot wrong. I said, oh, great. So we then started to change things, which is why we have seat serve now, why we give the opportunity for people to take food and drink to their seats, why we have swipe stations. So if we haven't physically got the blueprint to do something, it's a bit like, you know, if the horse won't go to the, you know, you've got to kind of drag the horse to the water, really. So we've tried to be innovative and change things around. Not everybody likes change. Not everybody likes innovation. However, I can't sit here as chief exec and accept poor levels of queuing. What he did say is, it doesn't matter what you do, at the Bernabeu, at the Millennium, at King's Home, 15 minutes before the game, it will be really busy. Half time, you're trying to get a pint pot into half a pint. You're going to get queue, so get over it, but you can make it better. So that's what we did, and that's why we started bringing other things in. So as you can tell, I've got a lot of frustrations, but quite a lot of the things around customer supporter experience, and hopefully with the CVC and the kind of minimum criteria changes that were going to be in place, we'll be able to sort a load of those things out. Where the issue always was, Mel, to be quite frank with you, was I always had to prioritise what to spend. So if I had a chunk of virtual cash here and it was spend £300,000 on a new PA system, or, you know, is that money better served going into a new tight head or into something else? Now, I had to really think about what the supporters would honestly, they'd get over Springy sounding a bit louder after 5 minutes, but would they get over us going backwards in the scrum every week? So there's always a balancing act as a chief exec, what you've got to prioritise, really.